So by now you should know that I kind of sort of wrote a book, and it's going to be published on November 20th, 2018. And I'm going to do a reading from the book from one of the chapters. I don't know if I'm even allowed to do that. I didn't exactly check. So this episode may be up for like a day, and then my publisher will say, you're not supposed to do that, and it will go away. But we'll live in this moment. We'll do it while we can. We'll be renegades together. And I will do a reading, but first I got to do some business. And if you don't want to hear about any of the business, just skip ahead 5 minutes or so, and we'll get to the bookie parts. Because I want to tell you about the stuff surrounding the book itself, because the book exists, and it will be out there. It will be published, and there's other things associated with the book, and you'll understand exactly what I mean. One, the book itself is about our universe. Surprisingly short, considering the topic is 13.8 billion years and 90 billion light years across. But there it is. It's also the story of our relationship with the universe. It's the story of how we came to know the universe scientifically, how we grappled with it, how we made advances in technology that unlocked more and more mysteries and wonders about the universe, of how for every question answered, 10 more were raised. And it's something that I loved and I still do. I chose to be an astrophysicist and a cosmologist because I love these topics, and it was so fun to like write down these stories. These are almost like my childhood stories, you know, intellectual childhood stories of how we came to be at our present state of knowledge and how we feel about it and how we dealt with it. That's what the story is about. That's what the book is about. Your place in the universe, understanding our big, messy existence. My original title for the book was The Universe Doesn't Care About You. The publisher and Barnes & Noble marketing team thought that was a little bit too dark, so they want something a little bit more, a little bit easier, and I get it. So if you're a fan of me, if you already know who I am, you'd see that title and be like, that is exactly what I want out of Paul Sutter. But for those of you people who don't necessarily know who I am, maybe you want something a little bit more approachable that you'd actually be tempted to pick it up and leaf through it before buying. Fair enough. I can deal with that. But that's my book. That's the story I wrote. And it's available for pre-order now at the time of me recording this, which is 2 months out before release. You can go to Amazon.com and you can pre-order it. You can go to Barnes & Noble, you can pre-order it. And go ahead and pre-order if you want. Apparently, this helps get the chances of the book appearing on some bestseller list, because you have to sell a certain number of copies before a deadline, like a week out or 2 weeks out after release. And the more pre-orders there are, the higher the chances that you'll hit some magical threshold. That doesn't matter a whole lot to me personally, because I know the people who want this book are going to find that book. And I did it for you. I wrote the book for you. Everyone who supported me, you can tell I'm doing this all off the cuff. I have absolutely no notes in front of me. I'm doing the book for you because this is a story that I wanted to share with you in book literary form. So I don't really care about bestseller lists, except it's nice, I guess. Another thing, you know how I always ask you to do iTunes reviews, podcast reviews for the podcast. I'm going to please beg you to put reviews on Amazon. After you've bought it, go give a review and do an honest review. Like seriously, if it's a 3-star book to you, give it 3 stars. If it's a 5-star book, give it 5 stars. If it's a 1-star book from you, can you just like step away from the computer and talk and think about it for a little bit before you write the review? But I really want you to be honest, because I've never written a book before. And it's not like the podcast that I've been doing for almost four years now, where every episode I learn a little bit more about how to be a halfway decent podcaster. I don't do 2 books a month. I only do 1 book like every other year or something. So It's going to take me a while to become a good book writer, and I need critical feedback. So if you like the book, give it a bunch of stars, and that helps the visibility. The more reviews there are, the more Amazon pays attention to it, yada, yada, yada. You know how it goes. Besides pre-ordering, there is another way to get a book, and not just any copy of the book, but an autographed copy of the book. So, you know, Patreon is how I support all of my education and outreach, not just Ask a Spaceman, but also Space Radio, the YouTube videos, science and art collaborations. That's the most fun parts of my life are supported by you. I can't thank you enough. If you go to patreon.com/pmsutter before the end of September. So if you're listening to this in the future, just go ahead and skip. Just go right to the book reading that's coming up in a couple minutes, because this is not going to apply to you. But if it is still before the beginning of October, if it is still September on your calendar of 2018, then go to patreon.com/pmsutter. If you're already a Patreon, a supporter, and you're at a level below $10 a month, bump yourself up to at least $10 a month. If you've never signed up for Patreon yet, sign up for at least 10 bucks a month. That's the threshold. 10 bucks a month for the months of September, October, and November. You'll be charged on October 1st, November 1st, and December 1st. If you keep that up for those 3 months, December 2nd, I'm going to send you a free copy of the book. It's not free because you're paying it. You 30 bucks. You know, it's like how much it costs on Amazon. But I'm gonna autograph it. I'll write a note and I'll ship it out to you. So really, it's a wash for me. I'm not making money from this. It's a way to support. It's a way to give back to my Patreon supporters. You're buying a copy of the book, but you're getting an autographed copy of the book, hand delivered. Not hand delivered. I'm gonna give it to the post office. They seem to be really good at delivering stuff, but I will deliver to the post office and then the post office will finish the job. So in a sense, I am hand delivering it to you, but I'm hand delivering it to you via the post office. Patreon.com/pmsutter, at least 10 bucks a month for the next 3 months. After those 3 months, you can take your Patreon away. You can drop a level. You can add a level. I don't know. Maybe you go up to 25 a month. I don't know. That's up to you. And it makes no difference for me. It's just so I can get some autographed copies out there in the world. And I want to start with the Patreon subscribers. I'm also doing a book tour. I'm working with my publisher. I'm working with my publicist to put together a book tour. I'm going to stick around Columbus, where I live, by the way, in December and January, because it's freezing cold and I don't really feel like traveling when it's freezing cold out. But I will be visiting other cities like Cleveland, Dayton, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati. And then from there, as the North begins to thaw out, I will be traveling a little bit more. So I already have a bunch of dates on the books, going to cities all across the country. Go to pmsutter.com/book. That's the main website where you can get links to buy it, information on the book tour, the whole deal. You can also buy autographed copies there. And guess what? They cost 30 bucks. Go there, look for your city in the book tour dates. If I'm not visiting your city and you would like me to, send me an email. You can send it to askaspaceman@gmail.com. There's also a contact form on my website, pmsutter.com/book. Send that to me. And if you have a venue, if you have a group of people that would like me to visit, I'm on the road anyway. It's not going to be that difficult to add additional stops. In fact, that makes it even better. So if I'm not stopping by your town and you'd like me to, drop me a note and we will try to work something out. Now, on to the book reading. Now, I've never done a book reading before. I don't know whether to make this overly dramatic, which is my usual inclination, to read it straight. So I'm just going to wing it. I'm probably not going to read the whole chapter. I'm going to read chapter 10 out of the book, which is about the cosmic web. And I'll just go for a few pages. I suppose I'll go until I get tired or thirsty and I want a break. So here it is, a selection from Your Place in the Universe, Understanding Our Big Messy Existence. This is Chapter 10, The Cosmic Web. The cosmic web is insultingly big. to state the bare fact that it's the single largest pattern found in nature does supreme disservice to the word largest. If there were a superlative to express a quantity greater than the greatest, that adjective might come close to addressing the magnitude of the cosmic web. Think of the largest thing you possibly can, a planet. The Earth is so large that even though it's round, it appears flat in your backyard. A solar system? NASA's New Horizon probe traveled at 36,000 miles per hour and took 9.5 years just to make the hop to Pluto. A galaxy? A bustling stellar megalopolis home to hundreds of billions of stars and 100 billion suns worth of gas. The cosmic web is made of galaxies, the same way that your body is made of cells. But even that metaphor breaks down, as do all metaphors, when describing the cosmic web. The cosmic web is made of galaxies, the same way your body is made of cells, if your cells were a million times smaller than they are. But the galaxies themselves are only representatives of the true bones of the web, dark matter. The matter in our universe appears, or doesn't, sorry, cosmology joke, to be made of some non-luminous particle or family of particles, one that doesn't interact with light or really anything at all. It's the dark matter that began pooling together billions of years ago. The normal matter simply fell into the already existing gravitational valleys. When we see a galaxy, we must imagine a halo of dark matter surrounding it. Likewise for a gigantic cluster. When we see the web, the light-emitting galaxies are tracers of the true structure underneath. Thus, while everything I'll talk about below concerns stars and galaxies, keep in mind that those are only the metaphorical tips of the cosmic icebergs. Let's start with some baby steps and work our way up. Voyager 1, launched in the late 1970s on a grand tour of the outer planets of the solar system, finally penetrated the bubble of our sun's influence as defined by the boundary where the stream of charged particles racing outward from the sun's surface begins to mix with the general galactic milieu in 2012. In 300 years, that little spacecraft, which is no bigger than a small car, mind you, will reach the inner boundary of the Oort cloud, a thin, diffuse shell of frozen debris left over from the formation of the solar system. Voyager 1 now enjoys the privilege of being the only human-made object in interstellar space, the long gulfs of emptiness between the stars that make up the Milky Way. It will eventually pass by another star, coming within 1.6 light-years of Gliese 445, an unremarkable red dwarf currently situated about 18 light-years from the sun, in 40,000 years. While it's difficult to predict exactly, astronomers are pretty sure that that's the closest Voyager 1 will come to another star ever. In 230 million years. Traveling at a steady 38,000 miles per hour, it will complete a single circumnavigation of the Milky Way without meeting anything larger than a stray bit of dust. Here's another perspective. The sun's nearest neighbor is Proxima Centauri, another unremarkable red dwarf, they're rather common, about 4 light-years from our home. If you were to build a scale model of our galactic neighborhood, and you were to put the Earth a scant 3 feet away from the sun, Proxima Centauri would be 200 miles away, and we're just getting warmed up. The Milky Way galaxy itself is around 100,000 light-years across. Simple math reveals that you could fit 25,000 sun Proxima distances across its breadth. In our scale model, with the sun 3 feet from the Earth and Proxima 200 miles from that, the Milky Way in its entirety would stretch 5 million miles, which would put the edge about 20 times further than the moon. That's a big model. Let's revisit our exploration of the deep universe using the handy new phrasing we learned when we first encountered Hubble and his fantastic result. The parsec, the quintessential astronomical jargon word. Like this. The Milky Way is about 30,000 parsecs, or 30 kiloparsecs, across. It's still unimaginably gigantic, but at least I don't have to type a bunch of illions anymore. The Andromeda Galaxy, the nearest major neighbor to our own galaxy, is about a megaparsec, or million parsecs, away from us. That simple statement hides an intriguing fact. Although galaxies are tens of thousands of times bigger than their constituent solar systems, the distances between galaxies are only a few times larger than galaxies themselves, making them sort of close together, relatively speaking. But the most interesting thing about the large-scale structure of the universe, on scales bigger than even galaxies, and the reason it has a name like Cosmic Web, is that galaxies aren't just arranged randomly throughout the cosmos, a fact that quite surprised the early cosmographers, the mappers of the universe. But in order to reveal the structure of the universe, you have to go much larger than our local patch. The work of Hubble and others to establish the expansion of the universe relied on a comparatively nearby sample of galaxies. Not nearly enough to reveal anything other than a scattered smattering of so-called spiral nebulae. Sure, there were dense beehives of galaxies like the nearby Coma Cluster, which flirtatiously suggested the existence of greater structures, but for decades cosmologists weren't sure if that was a significant feature or just a random collection. But beginning in the 1970s, astronomers began to perfect the technology necessary to systematically survey the locations of galaxies far from the familiar, using a potent combination of improved telescopes and computerized search algorithms. It was like the classic duo of scope plus camera that transformed our understanding, or lack thereof, of the 19th century universe, but on steroids. The new surveys pushed both wider and deeper, creating the first ever maps of our universe on a truly universal scale. Galaxy by galaxy, insignificant point of light by insignificant point of light, each dot representing 100 billion warm nuclear hearths set against the deep, vast coldness of our cosmos, structures began to appear. Long, thin ropes, broad walls, dense knots, immense voids. It was a web. A web made of galaxies. One by one, survey target by survey target, astronomers realized that at the largest scales, the galaxies of our universe are not scattered like salt sprinkled on a table. There was a pattern. There was order. The cosmic web, and I'll repeat myself in case you missed it earlier, the single largest pattern found in nature. It stretches from one end of the observable universe to the other, and most likely beyond that too, although we'll never see it. The complexity of the web is astounding. The same substructures and intricacies you would find in a spider web are found at these vast scales. The filaments are long and tenuous, in some cases only a few galaxies wide, but stretching for dozens of megaparsecs. Some walls are almost impossibly large. The first one was simply called the Great Wall, only a few megaparsecs thick, but hundreds of megaparsecs across. It was soon given a more specific name, the CFA2 Great Wall, for the curious, named after the survey where it was discovered, because it turns out there are a bunch of Great Walls in our universe. The walls and filaments intersect at the clusters of galaxies, the largest gravitationally bound structures in the universe. Home to 1,000 galaxies or more, they are relatively compact, a bare megaparsec or two from edge to edge. Most clusters are isolated creatures, settling into hydrostatic equilibrium and spherical symmetry long ago, but a few are cosmic car accidents, giving clues to their formation and constituents. There's a gruesome analogy here that I won't pursue further, like the infamous bullet cluster. Inside the clusters, we find not just galaxies, but also a hot, thin gas, the tenuous plasma of hydrogen, weak enough to register as a vacuum in the laboratory, but hot enough to emit X-rays. And between all these great extragalactic structures sit the voids. By volume, most of the universe is void. The filaments, walls, and clusters are tight agglomerations of galaxies with high density but low volume. By contrast, the voids are almost completely empty, literally devoid of much matter at all. They're not totally empty, though, and detailed surveys of individual voids reveal a surprising feature. If you zoom in on a portion of the cosmic web and look at the voids, you'll see a few dim dwarf galaxies. It's only by careful, detailed, prolonged observations that these galaxies reveal themselves to even the most dedicated astronomers. But they are there. You can play the same game that you would do for the entire cosmic web, map out their positions, and when you do that, you get a surprising answer, a faint echo of a cosmic web embedded inside the voids. The structure of the universe isn't quite a fractal, even though fractal cosmology has a long and storied history, but today, for various reasons, that word is the ultimate F-bomb in cosmological circles. But parts of the cosmic web do resemble a fractal, at least superficially. The cosmic web can be seen as a series of nested cosmic webs, each level dimmer and smaller than the last. This has only come to light, astronomy pun again, sorry, in the last few years. That's because astronomical surveys are set by brightness limits. You design a telescope, say, this big, I'm holding out my hand so you can see what I'm saying, with a sensor capable of detecting this many photons in each pixel. That sets a hard limit on the dimmest thing you can take a picture of. In deep astronomy, objects can be dim either because they're far away, or they can be dim because they're dim. So the same technology that allows us to sweep further into the distant reaches of the cosmos allows us to scan in detail the emptiest patches looking for any sign of light. It's only once you reach small enough scales, around 5 million parsecs, that the interactions between individual galaxies ruin the harmoniously nested picture. Also, once you reach large enough scales, around 100 million parsecs, the cosmic web loses its distinctiveness. At those scales, the breakdown of cluster, filament, and void becomes meaningless. A single 100 megaparsec patch of the universe looks pretty much the same as another 100 megaparsec patch. Each patch will contain its own unique arrangement of structures, an intergalactic fingerprint pattern, but the statistics of those structures, like the number and sizes of voids, the typical distance between clusters, etc., become the same. That is the scale of true cosmological uniformity. Remember the cosmological principle, the ground-based assumptions used in the mathematics of general relativity to describe and understand the history of the universe? Those mathematics, obviously, don't apply in the solar system or even the galaxy. There's too much other stuff going on, like cosmic rays and chemistry, that dominates the interactions at those scales. But out past 100 megaparsecs, all those complicated, messy, stubborn physics just blend together into a seamless blob, revealing the bland uniformity to satisfy the cosmological principle that our universe is homogeneous and isotropic. The cosmic web is huge and magnificent, a pattern stretching from one end of the universe to the other. The universe doesn't have an end, but the imaginative language was too juicy to pass up. The observable universe is about 90 billion light years, or 30 gigaparsecs across, and it's filled with this frightening, beautiful web of galaxies. Thank you so much again for all your support on Patreon, for being loyal listeners, for supporting me in this outreach and education journey of mine. I'm not reading from the book anymore, in case you couldn't tell. My book is Your Place in the Universe. It's available everywhere where books are sold. Go to pmsutter.com/book for all the info, and I hope to meet you where you live, not in your house, because that'd be a little weird, but in a public place where we can hang out and talk about the book more. Thanks so much.